Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. It is Wednesday, April 17th, and I think the sun is shining. I'm looking up at the skylight here in the KRFY broadcast studio, and this is The Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez, and I'm all by myself today. My co-host, Chris Bessler, has flown away, but he will be back next week. And we have a really exciting show for you planned. We have right now with us in the studio, the first segment of our morning show today, our students from the Sandpoint High School science class and their teacher. So we have Mr. John Hastings. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And we have two students, Wyatt Wade.
Good morning.
And good morning. And Freddie Libby.
Good morning.
Good morning, Freddie. And we're going to be talking about a lot of science here coming up. You have an important event coming up Friday at the Little Panada Theater. It's a movie called Chasing Coral. We'll get to that in just a bit. And all about why coral is important and really delving into that a little bit. Before we get to that, however, a couple things coming up. In the second segment of this morning show, I will be presenting a recorded interview with David Barsamian. He will be our keynote speaker on Thursday night at the library. He is a nationally syndicated radio host of Alternative Radio, which we broadcast here on Monday nights at 6 p.m. David Barsamian is a world-renowned journalist, and he will be talking about why journalism matters in this day and age. It is free and open to the public. It is Thursday night at the library starting at 6 p.m., so everyone's invited to that. But I will be presenting a recorded interview that Chris Bessler and I did with him a few days ago at the end of this hour. We also have the weather. How about that from the National Weather Service? Currently, they're telling us it's 45 degrees out. It feels a little warmer than that already. Today, we can expect a high of 57 with a 20% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy with winds 9 to 14 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with low around 40, south winds up to 9 miles per hour, and a low, 40 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, it starts getting to be a little bit closer to a little bit more showers, 30%, Thursday night, 60%, and Friday during the day, 90%. But I always like to get to the good stuff. On Saturday and Sunday, mostly sunny, high all the way up to 61 on Sunday. So with those open blue skies, we also have cooler nights and Friday night low of 34 and Saturday night 33. The Weather Service information. Also, I want to let you know about a fundraiser. Not a fundraiser, it's an event. Last night I had the opportunity of having Patrice Webb, she's a local singer-songwriter, on the Between the Notes show last night at 7 o'clock. And if you missed it, she is releasing her CD at DeLuna's Friday night. You can find out more by going to her website, Patrice Webb. And so I think we should get to our talk of with these science students from the high school. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. Fine. Your group of students, Mr. Hastings, science class, and Mr. Hastings, you have you are a teacher of environmental science and ecology. What else do you teach?
Forestry, horticulture.
Okay, mostly science, earth science.
It's all science stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've been studying the effects of coral on the earth's health and welfare, is that correct? I mean, is this coming from your teaching class?
Well, it's part of the class. It's a relatively small part of the class, honestly. And one of the things that I've been doing in that class for a couple of years now is showing this film, Chasing Coral. It's only been out 2 years. And it's a really powerful film. And it gets people very emotional. And the students are often saying, what can we do? So for a few years now, I've been trying to find a good program that we can work with to actually go down to the coral reef and try and spend some time on it, assessing the situation and working to improve it. So we found a good program, and so we're headed down there in the summer of 2020, and we'll probably have about 20 students that go on that trip.
Well, I want to find out more about the trip, but I also want to kind of layer on some information. I'll talk to the students. Is it a well-known fact that the bleaching of the coral reefs is an important sign of our denigrating environmental problems, or the environmental problems that we're facing right now?
Yes. Well, coral bleaching happens when the water is too warm, basically, for the coral to survive well. And so the warmer the ocean is, the more coral bleaches. And as the oceans and the earth as a whole is getting warmer, more coral is bleaching each year and each year.
So, and why is that important? So it's bleaching.
It's bleaching. Well, if a coral bleaches too much when it's too warm, the coral dies, and coral plays an important role in, you know, everything from sustaining the fish that we eat and use to run parts of the world markets to filtering out that ocean water.
When you first found out about this, how did you feel? What did you think? I mean, we talk about the ice caps in the Arctic and things like that are melting, but coral is another one of those things.
The coral bleaching and the effects of climate change on coral were something I hadn't really been exposed to much. It was something that just, it never really occurred to me that the oceans could be so greatly affected by what's happening in our air. So it was a profound moment for me to realize just how connected everything is and just how much damage a warming climate can do.
And I might add to that, and that's just unless you're a diver, you probably haven't been under the surface of the ocean much, so out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. But the density of water makes it such that of the planetary warming that we've seen, they estimate about 90% of it is in the oceans and not in the atmosphere. So we talk a lot about the atmosphere, we talk a lot about melting ice, but most of the impacts to this point have been in the ocean instead of the atmosphere.
What are some of the other impacts that you're talking about besides the coral bleaching? Is that what you said? No.
No.
Okay. I was halfway listening. So the coral is bleaching and we're concerned. How can this be turned around? Can this be turned around? Will.
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going and planting more coral to help, like, replenish the reef system there.
I meant Freddie.
It's okay. And just a lot of ways that we can help the coral is to reduce our emissions, our carbon emissions. Things as simple as just carpooling with some other person when you know you're going to the same place. Things as, like, not using plastic bags at the grocery store. Just reducing on normal ways in our daily lives that we produce carbon emissions can, on a grand scale of things, can have a huge impact on what we're trying to do.
Yeah, just as he says, reducing carbon emissions. And there's a lot of things that, you know, wouldn't occur to you, like actually eating beef. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I absolutely love it. It's probably one of my favorite foods, but unfortunately, just the way beef farms are currently set up, the cows are, you know, fed foods that produce, that result in a lot of methane. Yeah. And when they're transported, that's a lot more carbon put into the atmosphere. And there's also other stuff you can do, like flying is actually one of the, transportation through planes is actually one of the, what's the word I'm looking for? It puts the most carbon in the atmosphere per mile. So just anything you can do to reduce emissions, really.
So what you've learned is that science has answers to what's going on.
We have answers and we have solutions. We just don't really have a way to put them in place right now.
A lot of people deny climate science. What do you say to that?
That's a difficult question because it's the evidence. There's a lot of evidence towards that topic. And from what I've learned in my classes and from what I've seen in Chasing Coral, it's enough to make anyone really emotional about the topic and enough to, I feel, help convince them that climate change is happening, it's real, and ocean acidification and coral reef bleaching is one of the forefront, like, issues of this, that this is what's coming, and then it's only gonna get worse after the corals bleach.
So we get these signposts of what's going on, coral bleaching, ice caps melting. It's based on science. It's empirical evidence is there. It would be very depressing almost if you didn't think or know that there were some answers. And as you just mentioned, there are answers to turning things around. Or I recently heard about they're finding on a scientific way to take carbon emissions and turn them around. I don't know. That's probably still just the beginning of that subject. But so when you, as young people, when you find out and you hear about these things that are potentially impacting our environment and our way of life and our future here on this planet, as they say, the species, the Earth will continue. The species are in question. What? How do you feel? And what does it make you? You're both scientists. What do you think is going to happen? And how much are you going to contribute to some of the answers? We have either one of you. Wyatt, why don't you answer that first?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of things people can do. And I think that because it's undeniable, climate change is going to get worse before it gets better. I think as things get worse, people are going to start believing the science and noticing these undeniable facts in changes in our world, and people are going to come together, and they are going to motivate our leaders to fix it, and the world will turn around, and I'd like to play a role in that, in helping turn around in whatever small way I can.
Does that mean studying really hard for tests and getting really good grades so you can go to great colleges so you learn more and more and more?
Yeah. I suppose that is part of it.
So you study hard.
I do.
Okay. And Freddie?
That's a difficult question. I think it's hard for our generation because I feel like that our generation sees climate change like for what it is, the majority of it. And then there's people in the older generations that don't want to see it. And since even though we're growing up, we're getting into the whole situation. But as of right now, there's nothing that we can really, really do about it besides spread the word and like lobby and do climate change stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And so the older generations, it's going to be up to us because they aren't doing much.
And why is that? Do you think they're so ingrained in their way of life that it's hard for them to imagine changing? I mean, you're talking about flying. You know, they could have mass transit around the country, fast trains that could get you there almost as fast. Right mm-hmm. now, I can get from here to Wisconsin in 48 hours. We're driving to Spokane, getting on a plane, flying to Minneapolis, getting off the plane, driving into Wisconsin takes about the same amount of time. But the train is transporting, I think, a little different emissions, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think the older generation, as you say, can't buy it?
Well, I think there's a few different things that contribute to this denying of climate change. There is, of course, I feel like there's always a little bit of fear, you know, fear of what not being able to make that change, fear of having to change, you know, your ways and the country's ways, and, you know, economic fear even. I mean, people are scared that they're going to lose their jobs if the oil industry goes out, which, you know, I believe there have been multiple studies shown that converting to, you know, alternative, as they're called, alternative energy sources would create more jobs. So that's not really an issue. But there's always that fear that tells you that, you know, that something could go wrong or just fear of what's going to happen. So it seems most comforting to just outright deny it.
Maybe. I think one thing, too, though, is it's a bit of a misnomer when we say people aren't buying it. The majority of Americans at any age group are concerned about climate change, think it's real, and want to do something about it. It's a fairly small minority that is pretty vocal that thinks, that fears it for sometimes real reasons, like they might lose their job if they're in a particular industry, or less real reasons, some sort of conspiracy to lose individual liberty or something like that. But at every age group in the U.S., and the younger you go, the more likely they are to realize that, because it's, you know, 30 years ago, you had to listen to the science and accept it or not accept it. But nowadays you don't. Now you can see it with your own eyes. It's not that you have to believe some scientist who did a research project up in Antarctica. I can look out my window and see smoke in the sky and fall that wasn't there all the time in the past. So, and when if you look around the world, then the stats would be even more hopeful in that around the world, everybody's on board with this is a serious problem. We got to do something about it. And the young people that are coming up in this country realize that, and they will change it. They will change it.
Well, I know for me, just sitting in this room with two high school students that are dedicated and aware, fully aware of what's going on, has given me a lot of hope. So I think you're right, Mr. Hastings. It is a small minority that has a loud voice based on fear and other things. I always think of the coal industry. You're a miner, and you're going down into this two-mile tunnel into the earth, and it's a horrible job, and you get black lung disease when the alternative is working for a renewable energy company and probably making the same amount of money, maybe a little less, but your lifestyle and your also your contribution to saving the planet is going to be a different kind of trajectory. So it's really, we're at the turning point where probably we're going to start moving. I know that the climate scientists are saying we have 12 years to actually really make some big changes. But right here, I'm sitting with two young scientists that say we can do it. So I'm going with you guys. So you have, I would just want to let the listeners know this is 88.5 KRFY. Thanks for tuning into the morning show right now. And we're talking with high school student Wyatt Wade and Freddie Libby and their teacher John Hastings. Did I say that right?
It's Wad, Wad. Actually.
Okay.
It's, yeah, not
Thank
a big
you.
Deal.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. You guys are great. And John Hastings, their teacher, environmental science teacher. Now you have a big event coming up. Let's talk about that. It's a movie at the Panda called Chasing Coral. And tell our listeners about it and why it's important. And again, we can go over a little bit more about coral.
Okay. I think that it's going to be a great event that a lot of people should come. It's a really emotional movie, like we said before, and if it gets it gets our teacher pretty emotional when we watch it in class, and he's seen it multiple times and already knows the effects. And so if it can get him emotional, I think it can get anyone emotional, and it would be great if people came to watch this.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it three times and I've probably cried a little bit every single time. It's an incredibly powerful film. It's wonderful.
And what are they telling us? I've read, the Sundance film documentary category, at least it got a great award. So it's well done, first of all. Mm-hmm.
Very well done. And it's really exactly what it sounds like. It's this team of journalists, scientists, photographers, whatever they may be, went around and they set up underwater cameras in coral reefs to take time lapses for a full year to observe, you know, the rates at which coral are bleaching and how they're being affected. And it just goes through their journey of, you know, getting that set up and, you know, examining the results and looking at what they can do to, you know, make our oceans healthier and our planet healthier as a whole.
I think one of the reasons why the movie is so powerful is that, like, it's the imagery in it is just spectacular, and it's something that most people don't see often because they don't get the chance to go down into the coral and, like, go see that amazing reef. But this movie brings that to life, but it also brings to light the dangers that the corals are facing, and through, like, the imagery in that, it's really moving, and it's just incredible.
Anybody who has any doubt as to whether or not the planet is warming should see this film, because we see it to a certain degree above water up here where we're all living, but underwater it's magnified. It's so magnified, the effects of a warming planet. And when a coral bleaches, it's just the animal, the polyp part of it's booting out its algae that lives with it, and that's why it loses color. It can do that. It can do that on a periodic basis. But they say it usually takes about 10 years for a reef to recover from a bleaching event. And the reefs have been bleaching every year. And because of that, a large portion is dead already. And getting back to the trip part of this, where we want to do something, one of the things that they have done, it comes up in the film, and our time in the Dominican Republic, we'll be working with a coral reef nursery, where they have found polyps that somehow have survived slightly warmer water. And so they raise those in a nursery where this process called microfragmentation, and discovered almost by accident, accelerates their growth. So they find those corals that have some sort of natural genetic ability to survive slightly warmer waters. And so they raise them in a nursery, and then we grow them for a while and put them on the reef. So to kind of, I like to call it assisted evolution. Mother Nature might have been able to pull this off in 100 years or more, but we don't have 100 years. So by this process, we're accelerating that natural genetic diversity that would have happened to hopefully bring the reefs back quicker.
So you're doing fundraising to send 20 students and a couple teachers down to the Dominican Republic to work in the nursery.
That is correct.
With baby coral. That's cute. And it's kind of hopeful. If you thought of coral as what part of the organism of the ocean, would you think of it as the lungs?
I can see, yeah. I mean, I think the lungs would be an adequate comparison because, I mean, as I said earlier, they do a lot of filtration for the water and keep that water clean and healthier for the fish around them. And they also, like, if you really think about it, all the nutrients in the ocean come back to coral reefs. They're the foundation of everything, just as, you know, in the body, the lungs are where all the oxygen come from. They're the foundation of what allows the body to operate.
Another key role that they have, and that I'm using the analogies there, would be skeleton. And that's because they provide the structure that provides a place for, I don't remember the exact percentage, but the majority of ocean life needs the reef as a place to raise its young, to breed, to hide from predators, to find food. In spite of the fact that the reefs are about 0.5% of the oceans, they're about 50% of ocean life. So they're the infrastructure. They're the New York City of the ocean, where everybody comes to do what they need to do.
And Freddie, how much coral reef? How much of the ocean has coral reef, and how much of it is disappearing as the wonderful scientists are trying to bring it back?
I don't know the exact percentages like John here, but a very small amount of the ocean floor is coral reef. And that small amount is losing a large amount basically every year. It's, it can come back, like we've said before. Bleaching isn't necessarily a permanent thing, but repeated bleaching will kill the coral. And by losing that coral, it's a drastic change to the ocean floor and to sea life or ocean life. I mean,
do you all feel pretty dedicated to making sure this turns around since you know about it? So information can motivate folks to get involved. And the information that you've learned in your science class and from this movie, and folks will learn from this movie, which is, again, Friday night at the Little Panada Theater. That's April 19th. It starts at 7 p.m. It is free with a suggested donation because it is a fundraiser, and that is called Chasing Coral. But feel pretty dedicated after watching this movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So definitely. Things like this, documentaries that people put a lot of time and energy into, really can make a difference.
Yeah, they can, and they do. These documentaries, these things that people create, are, I think, what really change minds. The minds of people who are doubting the science of climate change, or outright denying it, or just for one reason or another not taking action. These things like Chasing Coral are what make the difference.
Art and science combined.
Art, yeah.
It's exactly. A good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate your coming in. Anything else you want to say? Just remind us again about the movie.
It's this Friday night, April 19th, at the Panada Theater. Doors open at 6. There'll be some music. There'll be some opportunities for raffles and other fundraising things like that. And then the film starts at 7. Short discussion after the film. Should be all wrapped up about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
It's a fantastic film. I'd highly recommend seeing it.
Exactly what he said.
Yeah. You know, you guys did great for your first time on the radio, all three of you. Thank you so much from the high school science class. This is a movie, Chasing Coral, that will play April 19th, Friday night, this Friday night. It is part of Earth Week that we're celebrating. And again, thank you for coming in.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
I want to say that I think we should have National Scientist Day because it's the scientists and the marriage of science and art that's really, as you say, inspiring us to action.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for coming in. Dear KRFY Morning Show listeners, we're going to take a short musical break. This is a song by Jackson Brown called Before the Deluge, and this was John Hastings' choice. I will be back shortly after the song. Stay with us. The morning show goes all the way till 9 o'clock, and I will be presenting a recorded interview with David Barsamian, who will be speaking at the library called Why Journalism Matters. And by the way, you three guys are invited to that talk also. Might as well come and find out more information. Get inspired, right? Yeah. Information inspires us to action. We're going to say that's our logo. So here's Jackson Brown, Before the Deluge. I'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Jackson Brown, Before the Deluge. And I just have to say, I just had two high school student science students in here with their teacher, John Hastings, talking about the upcoming movie, Chasing Coral, which it was really great to have them in, hearing about their understanding of our environment and what's going on. This movie is free and open to the public. There is a suggested donation because they're trying to raise funds to go down and help the coral situation down in the Dominican Republic. The movie's called Chasing Coral. It is April 19th, Friday. That's this Friday at 7 p.m. at the Little Panada Theater. So there's information about that. Sounds like an incredible movie. Up next, we have Chris Bessler and myself had the privilege of talking with David Barsamian. He is the keynote speaker of our public talk, which will take place tomorrow night. That's Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at the East Bonner County Library. And the title of the talk is Why Journalism Matters. And David Barsamian has been the host of a nationally syndicated radio show called Alternative Radio for over 33 years. He is in the trenches with journalism, knows a lot about why journalism matters. So this talk tomorrow night is open to the public and free. So come on down to the library. But we had the chance to sit down with David, or to call him and talk to him on the phone and record an interview with him. And here it is presented to you right now. You can enjoy this. I'll be back at the end for a bit more of the morning show. This is David Barsamian, recorded previous. David Barsamian, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure. It's great to be on community radio in Sandpoint.
You are the host of Alternative Radio, the nationally syndicated and acclaimed weekly radio show, now in its 33rd year, and you have written extensively on a range of subjects from world affairs, imperialism, capitalism, propaganda, the media, economic crisis, and current global concerns, to name a few. So let's start with the mission you carry into your work in independent media, radio, books, and lectures. What motivates you and what gets your attention these days?
Well, what gets my attention these days is the continuing epidemic of prevarications emanating from the Oval Office in Washington, D.C., the corruption that has increased manifold. Despite the rhetoric in the 2016 campaign about draining the swamp, Maybe the swamp was temporarily drained, but it's as big, if not bigger than ever, right now. And so there's so much to talk about in terms of U.S. economic policy, about U.S. foreign policy, mostly the corporate control media. And by that, I mean the five big conglomerates that 90% of our fellow citizens rely on for their news and information. Those five big conglomerates have a very narrow agenda. And they do a so-so job on the, you know, in journalism we learned that there are five W's. Well, they do a so-so job on the who, the what, the where, and the when, but they completely collapse when it comes to the why. So there's very little explanation as to why things happen. It just seems, well, Muslims are violent, Islam is a terrorist religion, its holy book promotes bloodshed, et cetera, those kinds of, you know, stereotypical, erroneous stereotypes. And so the media play a crucial role. Thomas Jefferson, one of the founders, you know, said an informed democracy will behave in an responsible fashion. Well, the question to ask then is, what happens when the democracy, the people, are not informed? I think you get the kinds of outcomes that we see right now, you know, all across the corporate control media. When I started doing this work in the late 1970s, early 1980s, there were 50 corporations that controlled most of the media in the United States. Well, in the subsequent almost four decades, that number is down to five. And so concentration is never a good thing. Although the capitalist class loves to talk about competition and how much it welcomes competition and embraces it, in actual practice, it is focused laser-like on consolidation, on mergers, on takeovers, on monopoly control. Because when you have monopoly control, whether it's chocolate or mayonnaise or cauliflower or the media, then you can set the prices and you can set the agenda. And there's no countervailing force. So that's what we're up against, and that's why I created Alternative Radio. That's why Sandpoint Community Radio is so important, because it is an independent voice that challenges the hegemonic thinking of the mainstream.
So for the last 33 years, you've been asking and delving into the question of why things are happening. And that's what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. Well, just take, you know, we are now in the 18th year of the never-ending war on terror, a war which is likely to continue ad nauseum into the future. You know, there is reporting on the who, the what, the where, and the when, but why this war continues, what started it, is still, I think, an unknown topic to most people. There's no connection made between U.S. foreign policy, which is an aggressive military policy intervening in the internal affairs of other countries, of overthrowing regimes that we don't like, of staging coup d'etats, in destroying democracy, where democracy existed in Iran, in Guatemala, in Brazil, in many other countries, Dominican Republic, Chile. That's what we need to be talking about, the connection between what is going on externally around the world with U.S. foreign policy. It has been described, and I think quite accurately, as an imperialistic foreign policy. And that's why, you know, they supposedly hate us. They don't actually, you know, I've traveled in all of those countries that supposedly they hate us. They actually like a lot of aspects of U.S. culture. When I was in Iran a couple of years ago, in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Syria, and Pakistan, Afghanistan, people in general like the U.S., but they don't like the intervention. They don't like the interference in their internal affairs. Now, you may know that right now, Libya is unraveling yet again. This is a direct result of the U.S. and NATO assault on Libya in 2011, resulting in the overthrow of the Gaddafi government and essentially the breaking up of the country. So actions have consequences. When the U.S. invades Iraq and destroys its infrastructure, kills hundreds of thousands of people, there are consequences to those kinds of actions. And the media largely create a kind of a cordon sanitaire, an inoculated area where none of this can be discussed. And I think that's the crucial role that independent alternative media should be playing.
David, I want to circle back a little bit later on the whole meme of fake news, since that's so much out there now. But first, I'm curious to you as your thoughts of other threats to journalism. You know, you already mentioned, you know, the corporate controlled media. There's been this massive consolidation, but that's been driven also in part by the way the internet is impacting the traditional revenue models that used to support journalism. Newspapers would sell advertising. By virtue of the ad sales, they could afford to hire journalists. And now we have a far smaller number of working journalists because newspapers have contracted so much as they have lost advertising revenue to the internet. What do you foresee for the market forces that are shaping journalism now? Do you see a new model that might emerge that would kind of rescue journalism?
Well, I would add magazines, by the way, to the crisis in print journalism. So it's not just newspapers, but it's also magazines, which have, in some instances, gone out of business or have contracted to just, you know, a very few pages. There is a definite crisis in journalism today that has been triggered by social media, by the internet, by people accessing information free of charge. And I think that's poses a real critical problem for the communication needs of a democratic society, because the internet really does not allow for any cross-checking, fact-checking. It's not necessarily evidence-based. Some articles are, others are not. Some are just wild, hysterical conspiracy theories like Alex Jones's InfoWars and Breitbart News and Newsmax and a lot of these other sources. We have to figure out a way, we collectively have to figure out a way, how do we support fact-based, evidence-driven journalism? How do we pay for that? Is it through subscriptions to online services that are providing news and information, that are putting people out in the field at great expense and, you know, uncovering important information, exposing the corruptions of the rich and the political elites that dominate the country? That's, I think, has to be a central focus going forward. Otherwise, we're going to rely on the aforementioned sites that really don't engage in news. They're really practicing MIC news. That's what I call it. And you have drive-by journalism. And so I also call the media a weapon of mass distraction. Investigative journalism is absolutely essential to the communication needs of a democratic society. To the extent that that is limited or disappears in its entirety, that would be and would constitute a huge blow to the communication needs of a democratic society and would open the field to charlatans and others who would, you know, have you believe that the sun rises in the west and sets in the east, that 2 and 2 is 5. So it's a critical time for journalists and journalism. And I must say that there have been some successful models. I'm thinking, for example, of The Intercept, which has some of our best journalists working for it, people like Glenn Greenwald, Jeremy Scahill, Liliana Segura, Laura Poitras, Murtaza Hussein, Mehdi Hassan, and many, many others. And that is, you know, depending on donations and subscriptions. You know, a day doesn't go by that I don't get some request from an online source requesting financial assistance to keep their work going.
So would you recommend that an average citizen that wants to, you know, support journalism should subscribe to some of these publications that are subscription-based?
Absolutely. I think it would be, you know, a very honorable and worthwhile thing to do, and will strengthen democracy because, you know, as Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. If the democracy is uninformed, then it opens the field for, you know, I think very nefarious kinds of tendencies which are already being seen in the political culture.
To circle back to the idea of fake news, which you just also addressed partly there. So how can the average citizen filter through this barrage of stuff they get online to find out what is actually fact-based, so they can make they can base their own opinions and their own beliefs on, you know, well-sourced information?
And that's a really important issue. You know, who do you trust? You know, well, I would start with KYFY in Sandpoint. You know, I would hope people there who are listening to this program and listen to the station on a regular basis support it with their membership. That's a very, you know, positive thing you can do. But as to the broader question of who do you trust, I think it's laudatory that people should approach news and information with some skepticism. Now, that doesn't mean cynicism. They're all, you know, the kind of comments that are made, they're all a bunch of liars. You can't trust the news. They'll do whatever they want. They'll report, you know, whatever they feel like reporting, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, we have to guard against cynicism. Skepticism is healthy. So if you see some particle of information, for example, you have the chief executive of the United States constantly, not once, but multiple times, calling journalists the enemy of the American people. Now, I just paraphrased that quote. I think listeners, people who are, you know, interested in the truth, should check out whether that statement was actually made by the President of the United States, or is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio just making up things as he's going along and wants to blemish the good name of our, you know, Commander-in-Chief? That, you know, looking at things, cross-checking them is a way to filter out the noise, the so-called fake news, and get closer to the absolute, you know, correct information. But it takes some work. And if you're only getting one source of information, for example, a lot of people on the right depend on Fox News for their news and information. I would say that, you know, that is somewhat problematic because Fox News itself is overwhelmingly not a news source. It's mostly 90% of it, I would say, is actually opinion. So you have, you know, Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and all the other members of the Chatterati and the Illuminati of that network giving their opinions as if that is hard news. And so we have to separate. I think that in recent years that line has been blurred between hard news and information and opinion. These people have their own opinion. They're certainly entitled to their own opinion, but it's not news. It's not solid information. So we have to, I think, you know, still support those entities that provide detailed investigative reporting. And it's very easy to flip on your TV or your radio and listen to 3 hours of Rush Limbaugh, to listen to 3 hours of Michael Savage, to listen to, you know, all the other right-wing voices that dominate talk radio.
Mm-hmm. And to just mention the other side of the spectrum, MSNBC has an awful lot of opinion mixed in with their news as well, and people that restrict themselves to listening just to MSNBC are subject to the same effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, you know, I call MSNBC MSDNC because it seems like, you know, they have completely embraced the narrative of the Democratic Party. And it's a lot of opinion. It's, you know, kind of a tsunami of opinion and very little news reporting. A bunch of people sit around a table and they chit-chat. And they're supposed to be experts on the topics they're chit-chatting about. But I find that really wanting and a very poor replacement for actual investigative reporting.
So, David, when you're talking about going deeper and finding out why things are happening, why journalism matters, and you've mentioned a few things, that how to respond to attack mentality. But I also want to just throw out there, alternative radio is one of those deep journalism organizations that you've put together here for the last 33 years. And you also need to be funded. I'm just going to throw that out right now. And that's what it takes, is support from people who care. Do you want to respond to that?
Absolutely. You know, this, what I created in the 1980s, alternative radio, has always been offered free to the full spectrum of public radio stations in the United States and around the world. And its sole source of income is through listeners donating, purchasing CDs or PDFs or printed transcripts of programs and or books that, you know, we make available. That allows us to do programs, for example, on surveillance capitalism with Shoshana Zuboff. You know, not a household name. I think one of the things I pride myself on doing is uncovering a lot of great voices that are out there that are not heard. I'm not just talking about, you know, Noam Chomsky, but I'm talking about Francis Fox Piven, Deepa Kumar, Jason Stanley, you know, that are not household names, but have very important things to say. And so the independence I get from being supported directly by listeners allows me to, you know, track down those people and feature them on alternative radio. You know, right now I'm editing a program featuring Michael Yates about the working class. May Day is coming up, May 1st, an international holiday in most countries, but not in the United States, for working people. So that's, you know, that's a the kind of voice and the kind of issue that I focus on. And Michael Yates is also not a household name, but he's out there doing very important work.
Well, David, thanks for speaking with us. We have just a minute or so left. You're going to be in town on April 18th at the library and speaking on why journalism matters. Any last thoughts you'd like to give people in preparation for showing up at that event?
Well, yes. Attending is absolutely, I hope everyone can come and hear me and can have a great, you know, discussion. But also I want people to support KRFY, a wonderful community radio station that is independent, that offers you a broad range of news, information, music, cultural programs. Please do support it. I'm looking forward to coming back to Sandpoint after many, many years. I think the last time was the station was still in its infancy. And I did visited the station and, you know, talked to a lot of people there. So I'm very excited about coming back. Looking forward to it.
Well, David Barsamian, we're really looking forward to your visit also. And again, that is a public talk Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at the County Library Meeting Room. And we hope you have a good trip out west here, and we'll see you on Thursday. Thank you so much for talking with us today. This is a long conversation, and we're looking forward to continuing it. with your public talk.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you, Chris.
All right. Bye now.
And that was our recorded interview with David Barsamian, who, as you just heard, will be speaking live at the library at 1407 Cedar Street Thursday. That's tomorrow night, April 18th at 6 p.m. It's free and open to the public. We hope you can join us. It's an evening of informed discussion with David Barsamian. He's a nationally syndicated radio host of Alternative Radio. He'll be speaking about why journalism matters. And if you didn't get to hear the whole morning show, we will be podcasting this on our website at krfy.org. And you can look under podcast to find that. I'll get that on there within the next half hour. And thanks for listening to the morning show. Next week, we will have a recorded interview with our Idaho state legislators, Sage Dixon, Heather Scott, and Senator Jim Woodward. So you can join us for that. We'll be here, and we'd love to have you. That's Wednesday. Tomorrow on the morning show, Jim Healy and Jack Peterson will have Dinah Wall, who will be talking about the festival wine fundraiser and the lineup for this season's festival at Sandpoint. That's at 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. We're going to go out with a song by Patrice Webb, who will also be releasing her CD at DeLuna's on Friday night. Also, don't forget there's a movie at the Little Panada Theater about Chasing Coral, also a fundraiser for the students at the high school science class. This is called Mercury Rising Blues by Patrice Webb. Hope you have a beautiful day. Thanks for listening.